Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we have a conversation with my favorite people about my favorite subject, which is taste. And today, I'm so excited to have with me in the studio in Bushwick, one of my favorite friends to talk about food and one of my favorite dining companions and just one of my generally favorite people, all the way here in Bushwick from Florence, Italy, Gabriella Gannucci, who is the president and founder of I Palazzi, which is an organization of universities in Florence that includes Apicius, or Apicius, as you say in Italian, Apicius, as we might say in English, which is the Culinary and Hospitality Institute of Florence. Gabriella, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So good to have you here. And there are so many things that we could talk about and so many things we have talked about over the years. But I want to start with what's going on in Italy. You know, we hear a lot about Italy in the news, and I'm talking about food, but also the state of being. There's an economic situation going on, and I know Florence is a little isolated destination there. But give us a little update on what's happening in Florence.
Well, Florence, I believe, is a little bit different from other cities because of the tourists and a lot of visitors right. over the year. So you do see shops closing and family-run business not doing well. But I don't think we suffer as much as they suffer in the South, where people really do not have jobs at all.
Right.
I also believe that the economy is bad, but it's described in a worse way than it is, really.
Right.
So.
Right. News does that, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're in the place and you read about it, it's two different things. I mean, even thinking about the storm here, Sandy, if you read about Sandy from somewhere else, you thought, oh my God, the whole city floated away. But life is like that. Mm. So as a tourist destination, I mean, we'll get to the culinary education part of what you do, but as a tourist destination, Florence is also unique, I think, in food, because people come there for a certain experience, but when you live there and when you engage in life there, something else, you may desire something else. Can you talk a little bit about the state of food in Florence that a tourist might experience, but also someone who lives there might enjoy?
I believe that, like everywhere else, there are always two sides yes. of a different city. There is the side you visit, you know, and right. then there is the side that you live when you are born and raised and work yeah. in a city. So I remember the first years I was, you know, doing business with international people. They would always ask me a question like, don't you really feel so taken when you walk by the Duomo? I really never looked at the Duomo when I walked by. And this is, I think, a good example, right? Because
right.
when you live in the city, people were asking me, do you go to the Uffizi every day? No, I didn't go to the Uffizi every day. I went to the Uffizi when I was a student and
right.
I was studying art. So this gives also an example on how you can see a city. People come to Florence for the first time. Number one, there are a lot of stereotypes on food,
right.
especially. So they come and look for what, you know, it was described in Under the Sun or the Tuscany.
Right.
Some people don't even know that Tuscany is a region.
Right.
So, I mean, there are a lot of stereotypes everywhere, you know,
right.
not just in Italy. And in the past few years, I saw trattorias, you know, coming up and decorated and designed to look old, but they're brand new, right. And the food is not really good food. It's so something that, you know, is done for tourists,
right.
And I'm really, really sad about this. And with our students, we always give them orientation and tell them where to go and just avoid tourist traps and all that kind of stuff. But it happens because Florence is living on his past, at this point is like Venice is sinking in its past.
Let's say more about that, because I know we've talked about that together a lot, and you don't just mean in food, you mean in culture.
No, in general.
Right, because it's like becoming a museum, a sort of dead museum rather than a lived city.
I call it Disneyland.
Oh, really?
And because you see also the type of visitors is getting worse and worse, you know, means worse and worse in terms of, you know, culture. So there is not a contemporary art museum in Florence, if you think about that.
It's you amazing,
know,
right.
Isn't
right.
it? Nobody thinks about right. it, you know, so it's still stuck to the Renaissance, you know, where, and the Renaissance was this big opening towards, you know, culture and art and everything.
Right.
And after that, we haven't had anything. So it's been centuries of years that we live on our past.
Right.
And at this point, if nothing is done to create a future, you know, it will just sink. I believe.
That's so interesting, I think. And also, you know, well, the place I feel like that happens here in America, maybe New Orleans, where there was a time, I remember right after Katrina, there was a very contentious time where even in the food area, New Orleans was always held up as this unique American food culture, unique in America, I should say. And yet those of us in the food world thought it had sort of died when that food was Cajun and Creole was created and never evolved. And here was an opportunity after Katrina not to turn it into a mausoleum for that, but to actually make it a dynamic city. But that's hard to do, especially when everyone who comes there wants to see the old.
They all want, you know, the stereotype.
Right.
You know? So it's so hard. There is also the public administration that doesn't understand and doesn't have a vision for the future. We really hope in our mayor, you know, Matteo Renzi, because he's young and energetic, and we hope he can do, he has already started to do new things for the city itself.
Right.
We have a few, you know, good restaurants, but not as good, you know, as many as you would expect in a city with such a strong food tradition as Florence, you know.
Right.
I don't know if I can mention places.
Of course,
but,
please.
Yeah. There is Ora d'Aria, which is really coming up with Chef Stabile. And also, I personally love the Il Palagio at the Four Seasons with Vito Mollica, chef. I think they're, you know, bringing something new to the city.
Uh-huh.
If we talk about tradition, I still love our friend Giordano Monni and La Buca dell'Orafo, because
right.
I believe it's the best combination of quality and price as
right.
well. So,
your conglomeration of universities began with the cooking school with the Petrus, and you were a school designed to attract foreign students to come in part, or do you also have local students participating in your programs?
We do have some because we our 1 year and 2 year programs are recognized by the region of Tuscany, so for professional studies.
Okay.
So we do have some. We'll have more in the future because the school system is changing a lot, so they will have opportunities and scholarships
right.
to come. But I started from food because it has been always my passion.
Mm-hmm.
There are recipes that are chapters of my life, so it means a lot to me.
So what part of what I wanted to ask was, in thinking about what unique culinary experience or education people coming from other parts of the world might come to Florence for, obviously it's not necessarily going to be to make the a ribollita or whatever. They're there to learn about food in general and in perhaps even more about food culture, and I wonder if you could talk about that.
Sure.
A little.
I think more than recipes, our culture is really based on food, you know. So in our history, if I think about, you know, the banquets that Buontalenti prepared for the Medici, it was always a celebration of food. So food is so connected to our culture that it is impossible just to teach recipes. Also, because we don't have a strong technique as they do in France.
Right.
So our special thing is the culture connected with every single region, city, small village. There is one recipe that my grandmother used to make for carnival, and it's polpette with turkey.
And like a meatball, a ground meat?
It's a long process. It takes 2 days. You have to make a stew with the turkey, and then you add breadcrumbs, and you add raisins and pine nuts, and then you make the thing, and then you fry them. And my family was always involved in this recipe, so I thought, everybody was making
it. Yeah. Right.
And I discovered no one. So my grandmother is from a little village on the hills of Tuscany near Florence, and only in that village there was this tradition. I don't know how it came.
Someone had a turkey? I don't know.
I guess so.
In February?
And it was big, and they didn't know what to do with all that meat. So I think this explains very well how, our tradition, it's always connected to a fact, to a holiday, to a historical reason. There is always something linked to the culture.
It's funny. I taught students, as you know, because they were often received at your schools for NYU for a while, graduate students in a master's program. Many of them raised or at least living life in the cosmopolitan city of New York. And even though New York is probably as food obsessed a city as America has, and now all of America seems to be food obsessed, this idea of the culture of food was always a revelation for those students who considered themselves sophisticated mostly, and obviously I'm generalizing, but the idea that food wasn't about entertainment necessarily, and it wasn't about it wasn't about status, it wasn't even about education. It was just about identity. It was who you were. It was just part of life. It wasn't a performance of life in some ways, I think, was very inspiring for our students. It changed many of their worldview, which was our intent in a short period of time. Could you talk a little bit about the differences? You spend a lot of time here in New York and in America, and you're as versed in what's going on here in parts I've never been to even, as in Italy. What do you see as the differences between the food culture there and something we might take away from it here?
Well, as you said, it depends. America is so large and big, and you cannot even make a statement about one single state. But it's the idea. Number one, here, the food is not connected with the family. Mm. I was raised in a way that, and as many other people in Italy, most people in Italy, were on a pace where the food gives you the time of your day. And so you wake up and you have breakfast with the family, and then you have lunch with the family, and then you have dinner with the family, and there are people cooking all the time. And so you see cooking. Even if you don't know how to cook, you know exactly the process.
Interesting.
And you know the season, because, seasonal cooking is a very important thing in Italy. Here I see people that don't really have this family value, at least the people I know. I don't want to say things that, And so I see that people they save time going out to dinner or ordering food, from restaurants to their home. But it's not really adding anything to the people, to the family, to the friends. When people cook, it's like a way of sharing who you are, and giving your friends and your family some part of yourself.
Right.
So I think this is the main difference.
It's interesting. Yeah.
And also, people here, there is abundance of food.
Right.
And this is a big difference with Italy. Even if today, we're not the stereotype Italian poor. No, it's not that way. But still, we don't waste food.
Right.
And here you see in shops and supermarkets, if you spend 50 cents more, you'll get double size. It will never happen in Italy, because food is something precious.
Right. I'd like to explore that topic a little bit more, partly because in a lot of the the work we're doing at the Beard Foundation lately in food system change, let's say, food waste is a huge issue. And it happens at every stage of the process of preparing and consuming food, whether you leave it in the field or you serve gigantic portions that no one could ever eat. And in some ways, and I know I'll get in trouble for saying this, I look at the problem of obesity in America as an issue of food waste, honestly. I mean, those are wasted calories. So what does respect have to do with how you handle or food? Or what role does it play, do you think? Could you just expound a little bit on...
Well, again, I think it's tradition. You know, in the past, poverty was a big issue, so you couldn't waste food, you know. And so people would... leftovers were used to make new recipes. You know, if I look at my grandmother's recipes, she has, I don't know, probably 70% of them are with leftovers.
Oh, funny.
Really.
Right.
So, right. You know, the same, you know, piece of meat you would, you know, eat as a steak the first day, and leftovers you would make a meatloaf and so on. So this is part of our culture as well. But also I think that teaching a good way of eating with moderation and drinking with moderation, I think it's the same issue. Yeah. You know, appreciating quality instead of quantity, it is something, again, that is part of our culture. And here, I would say people are more attracted by quantity. Uh-huh. I don't know why.
I don't know why. Well, think about that for a second.
I will.
Well, we'll take a brief break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Taste Matters. I'm talking with Gabriella Ganucci from I Palazzi in Florence.
You are listening to Snowmine. Let Me In by Snowmine. Stay tuned on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I am talking with Gabriella Ganucci, who, among many things, is the founder of a cooking school in Florence called Apicius, and other universities, the Florence University of Art, and the Fashion, I'm going to get the name wrong, what is?
FAST.
FAST, which stands for?
Fashion and Accessories Design Technology.
Okay.
Studies, I forgot. I'm sorry.
We all forget. Before we get back into the conversation, I want to remind people who are listening, if you're listening to the iTunes podcast or to the archive on heritageradionetwork.org, that you can write us questions. Even if we can't answer them to you on air, we can get the answers to you, and you can send those questions to info@heritageradionetwork.org, or you can tweet us questions or comments at Taste Matters HRN. So we're talking about Italian food culture in its relationship to American food culture, and also I'd like to change the conversation a little bit to talk about taste and an idea that when you have a culture as strong as it is in Italy vis-a-vis food, you have a sort of body of knowledge from watching your grandmother. You said people know how to, I love the statement that people may not know how to cook, but they've seen cooking. They know the process. They're, it's not a mystery as it is sometimes here, where no one's ever seen anyone do anything except open a box, if they've even done that. And so I wonder, how does that translate into a curriculum? Like, what is the process of teaching that? I know we talked earlier a little bit about that there aren't, you're not recipes, but how do you teach that, especially to people from all over America and all over the world who come to your schools?
I always say that we have to teach, you know, with the five senses, because you have to experience the food in Italy if you really want to understand the culture, and the other way around. Right. The curriculum is built as to give the students an idea of what Italy is, which means Italy is not a country.
Right.
It became a country 150, you know, years ago, but still there is this regional tradition so strong everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, you have to teach students the first thing not to talk about Italian food. It doesn't exist.
Right.
You have to, you know, talk about regional differences, and that's the main thing. Yeah. And then you have to teach them seasonality, which is so important in our culture. And then how the food is homemade most of the times. So the curriculum was built around these things, history of food is in the first year, because they really need to know how our food evolved, mm-hmm, over the years. And then we have several field trips to vineyards, to farms, to restaurants and markets. They have to see how, you know, the food is produced and then brought to the table. And then we have, you know, all the courses that, you know, other schools have here, which are, you know, restaurant operations. They need to,
sure,
learn also that stuff. And then, of course, the tradition of Italian food, regional cuisine. It's all part of the curriculum.
Okay. It seems daunting to me to even begin to understand how to communicate that. And one of the things I want to ask you is, when you're here in New York, which is, When I tell people I'm from New York, they think, oh my God, that's the land of the best Italian food. And I think, well, where? Because I don't really know where to get it. And when you do, it's so unlike Italy. What are some of your impressions of what you see here as interpreted as Italian food, even knowing that it's Italians mostly behind some of those restaurants? But it's a little bit of the reverse tourist phenomenon we were talking about earlier. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I've seen an evolution over the past 20 years. You know, it was mainly when I came to New York for the first time in 1990, and the food was mainly from the South, so it was lots of tomato sauce, at least in the places I used to go. And then year by year, I've seen places, you know, opening from different regions. So from the North, I saw risotto probably only 10, 12 years ago for the first time in New York.
Yes. Right.
And, you know, risotto was on my table every Sunday, you know. So,
funny, right.
So I've seen this kind of change. The Italian food I tried the first times, it was more of the tradition of the South, because lots of people from the South came,
right,
to America. So it was a very strong taste, which I'm not used
garlic
to.
Garlic and
lots of garlic,
hot peppers and whatever.
That,
right,
I don't use at all. So,
One of the biggest surprises when I first cooked in a kitchen in Italy, in the North, in Turin, was that when someone used garlic, the waitstaff would be like, "Che puzza!" Like, they just couldn't believe that smell of garlic.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is a political, social commentary also, but that's
another topic
of another show.
Yeah. It is. So, you know, now I can eat great Italian food, which doesn't exist,
right,
in New York, regional Italian food, but it is always a little bit different, but it is normal, because it has to be adapted to the local taste. You know, I believe that if I cook pasta the way I cook at home, my U.S. friends here wouldn't like it, you know. So there is adaptation,
right,
and integration, which is great.
Right.
It is fantastic. But you can, you know, get great quality in New York City.
Right.
Not in other states, though.
No. Good to know. Well, that's an interesting point, though, because we often, when we're talking about or evaluating the quality of an experience in New York, and this is something I think that's in transition, we we're very proud as New Yorkers to say there's an authentic experience here, especially when it comes to Italian. And yet that authenticity might be a stereotype and not really true to the values of the food. It may need to change based on what's here. Or I always think that when you go to a trattoria in Italy, like, you could never open one here that looks like a little small town trattoria with the bright lights and the television and the refrigerator in it. I mean, we turn them into Disney World or something just by design.
Well, I think it's part of the integration, you know, right. And I believe in cultural integration, and this is what I teach my students as well. You know, I don't want them to come to Italy and expect what they have at home, and at the same time, when I come here, I don't expect to find exactly what right. I have at home, you know, because there are other people here, there is a different culture, and the food and the taste has to adapt and be happy with the local culture.
Right. Interesting. Back to Florence and this idea that there is a strong culture and tradition, and even that the notion you brought up right at the top of the show when we were talking about how in some ways Florence is sinking under the weight of its tradition. Where is the place for innovation within that strong culture rooted in family and regions? Like, my experience in some of the most innovative restaurants in Italy, some meals that we've yeah. experienced together, I can't really say enjoyed, is that it doesn't always find a place. It's a very delicate balance. What would the equivalent of contemporary art be in food in Italy that you think might work? I know that's a hard question.
Well, I believe that now internationally people are looking at food like a visual experience more than a tasting experience. And I think there is space in taste, uh-huh. in merging tradition, taste, and the visual experience, but in a way that I want to know what I have uh-huh. in my dish. You know, usually now when you try to be too innovative, you cannot even understand what you're eating,
right.
and that's not what I like to taste. Good food. So there is space for, I don't think for chemistry, I don't believe uh-huh. in that, but in looking for new combinations, there are new ingredients. So, you know, our tradition, our dishes of tradition can be reinterpreted with new ingredients and just keeping the tradition, but adding something special, again, for the cultural integration. Uh-huh. You know, in Florence, you couldn't find, except for Chinese food, 10 years ago, you couldn't find a Thai restaurant, a Japanese restaurant. It was all ribollita.
Really. She says disdainfully, yes.
And tiramisu, uh-huh. which I really don't like. Well, now there is more exposure to international culture,
right.
so I think we can really get a lot from other cultures. You know, that's my way
right.
of being innovative.
A recent guest also was talking about the sort of community of chefs has expanded globally because of smartphones and Twitter and the internet and sort of this constant communication about what's happening. So perhaps now chefs are no longer isolated on the top of a little mountain town in Tuscany. They're really part of a global community and very easily have access to what's going on. That must have an impact too, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, you see the same things everywhere in the world, I mean, at the same time. So,
right.
you know, we were talking this morning about the macarons, you know.
And right.
How,
French,
you know,
macaron,
in Italy
right.
now you have only macarons everywhere, and in New York, macarons. So I guess it's part of, you know, the time we're living right now. But I believe, you know, I mentioned again Giordano Moni, who's doing, you know, he's not just cooking traditional food. He's really trying new things and with new ingredients, and but still the taste is great.
I'll remind people listening, this is at Buca dell'Orafo, where if I could
yes.
go tonight, I would have dinner. and don't be put off by the fact that it's next to the Uffizi between the
yes.
Ponte Vecchio. It's a very special little place. Delicious.
It is special. And I think he's very innovative in his own way, because he was able to transform a place in the most touristy space in Florence.
In the world, maybe.
In the world.
Yeah.
In a place for locals, you know, and where tourists go, but only those with a special taste who know and appreciate good food.
Right.
So I think that's already innovation.
Well, on that note, I think we'll call it a conversation. I'm sure people listening think that there are those people who want to know where that restaurant is, and maybe we'll even put it on the website, because it is, I think, indicative of an evolution, as we were talking about, of tradition and contemporary life in a very real and delicious experience. Thank you, Gabriella, for coming all the way out to Bushwick, not exactly Florence, or even the West Village, where you spend the other part of your time, but a real center of great food and enthusiasm for food and food culture. So thank you for joining us.
Grazie mille.
Next week, I'm not even going to say who might be coming next week, because it's a bit of a surprise and it isn't confirmed yet, but if we do, you'll want to listen, so tune in to heritageradionetwork.org every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. We have a conversation about food because taste matters, and between now and next week, why don't you eat something authentically Italian and revel in how delicious it can be. Thanks very much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.